back to this situation with the oil a few days ago, we had a really strong rain all night long. It was the rain that actually came through the Gulf and hit the Gulf Coast, you know, from the storm. And when we got up in the morning, I saw a real amazing sight. We walk out on the porch here, and we're looking across a very large part of the lake. And as far as I could see, because of the sun wasn't really out, but it was behind clouds, and you could tell the brilliance coming from across the water was shining across the top of the water. The water quite often is very smooth on this lake because it's very deep. And so it doesn't really get big waves on it. But it was very smooth that morning, but there was still a light rain falling, you know, all the way across the lake in here. And I saw across the lake oil sheen streaks as far as I could see. It was striped, kind of, you know, although it wasn't, you know, nice and square lines. It was obviously wiggly lines, but there were sheen streaks all the way across the lake. Some kind of an oil film was going across the lake. And of course, it was raining at the time, and I walked over to the edge of the porch, and there was a valley coming off of the roof there, where it was pouring water down on the edge of a porch there. And I took a dog bowl and just, I don't know why the Lord put it in my heart to do that, but I shoved it over underneath that water coming off the roof. And when I did, that water started sudsing up. I'm talking about like suds was forming on top of that water. So I walked through the house and looked out the front door, which had glass in it. And there's a driveway that comes down off the side of the hill, a long sloping driveway that comes down right straight to the front of the house. And at the end of that driveway, it broadens out on both sides for vehicles to park, but then it came right to the front of the house, and then there's a place for dirt for plants and things on both sides of a walkway in front of the house. So actually the water that came down that concrete all the way down that hill, it wasn't fed by any of the hill on either side, because the concrete was built up. The only thing that was coming down that concrete was rainwater. And it came into the dirt right there in front of the door. And the only thing really living in that dirt, I mean, they decided to just put pine straw there because there wasn't anything really living in that dirt. No plants living in that dirt. Whatever was coming down the concrete was evidently taking it out, other than a few pine straw put in there. But when rainwater was falling on that dirt, it was bubbling, literally bubbling up. And I knew there was something in that rainwater, because that's just totally not normal, you know, for rain to hit a puddle on the ground and instead of just make a tiny wake, it raises bubbles up. But that's what it was doing. And there's some kind of suds and there's some kind of oil out there, you know, that's coming out of the sky, and I'm sure it's the same old thing, because the plants continue and to look worse and worse. And we've had reports from all the way up in New York, people having this problem. So it's continuing to poison the land. You know, recently we got this. I'll just read this little tiny article to you. It's about. It's from the New York Times. It says Louisiana relief wells may not be necessary. I'm sure y'all all heard that. But it says, in the strongest indication yet of BP's runaway oil well in the Gulf of Mexico might be plugged for good. Officials said Thursday that they were conducting tests to determine whether further work to seal the well was needed. A decision was expected Friday on whether crews needed to continue drilling relief wells for a procedure called a bottom kill, in which mud and cement would be pumped underground to seal the well permanently. Admiral Thad W. Allen, the retired Coast Guard officer who is directing the federal spill response, said an earlier effort to plug the well temporarily might have created a permanent seal. But Admiral Allen said that it was more likely that drilling would continue on the two relief wells, which have been said to be the most reliable means of sealing the well permanently. Well, yeah, I have some questions about that, you know, that I feel are very, very pertinent. You know, picture in your mind a well going, let's just say what they're telling us is the truth, okay, which there's some major doubt about that, even about the well that they're dealing with or the riser that they're dealing with, and you already know about that, so I'm not going into it. But let's just say that they are actually working on the well, and that what they're saying is the truth. There is a well that is going down about 5 miles underneath a 1 mile of ocean, and they want to plug this well. And according to law, in order to plug a well, you have to fill it with concrete. If you're going to totally abandon that well and you're not coming back to that well, according to law, you have to fill it with concrete. Okay? So the idea of this pipe is supposed to, well, originally was, I think, 21 inches is the idea of this pipe. So if you're pumping concrete straight down a pipe that big, what they expect of you if you're going to abandon that well is to fill that well casing with concrete. So my question is, why is it that the top fill wasn't enough? Why isn't the top, I mean, when they normally leave a well, they don't do a bottom kill on any normal well. They just, you know, pump concrete in from the top. And they seal it. That's it. Okay. So, if everything they've been saying was true, why do they need to do a bottom kill? And it's really not bottom. It's only 2.5 miles down through the ocean floor instead of 5 miles, which I think I understand leads them basically into the oil chamber or the oil deposit. Okay. So, why is it that their top kill didn't work? And I just remind you that they did a top kill once before, or attempted to do a top kill once before, and it failed. And it failed because they pumped 3 shiploads of mud down in there with other things to try to plug it up. And those other things weren't coming out the top, by the way. They were going down in that well and disappearing. And it never plugged it. And, of course, we know from BP footage, we have on our site at least 2 instances there, footage of the ocean floor lifting up. And in one case, it just fell back down because it blew out somewhere else. It relieved itself and just fell back down. That was BP's camera caught that. And that had happened several times. The original one we have on the site where it actually came up and then blew out right in front of the camera. So there's only one way for that to happen is you got holes in the well. And why would they pick 2.5 miles down to put their relief well unless they figured that was below the area of the leakage? They know that there is leaks in the pipe because there's no way for it to get out underneath the sea floor unless there's holes in the pipe. They had O-rings that they left out. Who knows why in the world anybody would leave O-rings out of joints in that high a pressure? Who knows why anybody would do such a thing? A very small leak with that high a pressure and sand blasting through it would very quickly make a big hole, almost like a blowtorch blowing through steel. It would just blow a big hole in it, and with that much pressure blowing through it. So why did they pick 2.5 miles down? They must have thought this would be below the leak, If they're going to seal it on both sides, they would have had to do this. Why would they recently have said, we've got to do this bottom kill to permanently seal the well? Because there's holes in the pipe. And when they pumped the concrete in from the top, it went out those holes and underneath the seafloor exactly like the mud did. Okay? So they said, we'll have to go and do this. In other words, they couldn't pump it all the way down and fill the well up. It failed again. That's the only reason they would have to go and do this bottom kill. Okay? So here they are going 2.5 miles down, or actually 3.5 miles down if you count the ocean, to pump mud and then concrete in behind it to try to seal the well. It's not sealed. It is not sealed, or they wouldn't be doing this. If there was no holes in it, they wouldn't have to do this. Okay? And why now are they stopping to re-examine it? Everybody questioned that. Okay, so they told us they were going to go and do the bottom kill, and then when they started getting close, they decided, nope, we're going to stop, we're going to re-examine it, maybe we won't have to do this. Okay, so what made them stop and re-examine it? They had made up their mind to go down there and plug it from the bottom in order to try to permanently seal it. So what made them do this? Did they see something? You know, we had witnesses from people who found out that they did sonogram shots on this well and found that the well was not in good shape. It was shot. It was being blasted through and blasted to pieces or something. They normally use electricity, an electrical charge down the pipe in order to get them to focus their drill point on the pipe, in the center of the pipe, and get it lined up. They have to make a good attachment to this pipe. And if they can't make sure they're going to hit the center of the pipe, from what I understand, they don't dare do it. Or they have to back up and shoot at it again. And so they keep doing this until they get a good lineup on this pipe. Otherwise, they could have 2 blowouts. You know, I mean, they could make another disaster, see? So they're going to be very careful. For some reason, when they started getting close, they stopped to re-examine their whole thought on this. Did they find that the pipe was too thin to drill into, or what did they find? Or that they did not have an electrical charge down there because the pipe is not one piece anymore? I don't know. I have no idea. But they decided to give some more thought to this. And as far as testing the pressure of the well, I don't know why that would even be an excuse whatsoever, because there's no way they can get full pressure on the well. With the holes in it, there's no way to get full pressure on the well. And it's still going out. It's still coming out under through the fissures underneath the ocean. 4 university science groups went out and tried to tell NOAA that there were oil plumes coming out of the ocean floor. And in each case, they tried to discredit them and to back them off and to take authority over them, which they didn't have, and all these things. See, these independent groups that went out there, science groups, and oceanographers who went out there, 4 different university groups did this. And they, you know, basically shouted them down. They just did not want this out in the public. Okay, so there's definitely holes blowing oil out underneath the ocean. And so if they decide to go ahead and do a bottom shot and they're successful, the only way we would ever know that they're successful is if these fissures close up and the oil plumes stop. Okay, that's the only way we would know it. Why 2.5 miles down? Because it has to be, because they think that's below the holes in the pipe. If there are holes, if there turns out to be holes below the 2.5 mile cap that they want to do in the side of the pipe, then everything that they pump in there won't do any good. It'll keep on leaking. So if they do claim to have sealed the pipe, the only proof would be is if the fissures are still leaking or not. Okay. We discovered recently that some scientists are saying that the loop current is not looping anymore. It is in an eddy, and it is currently broken because they say the thermal layers that were separated and caused this reaction were dissolved. And so we still have this situation ongoing, and we can't believe the government because they've lied over and over and over. Let me read to you something else, which we really didn't make a big thing of. It was just a link above a whole bunch of other links concerning this ongoing situation. It's really the bad news. Okay. So I want to share with you the bad news as a warning to the people around you that don't know because they're listening to the national news, which as I've said before, is owned by the same people our government's owned by and BP is owned by and can't be trusted. So anybody that's listening to them is not going to hear the truth about what's really going on. So I want to share with you a little bit of this warning here, and then I want to share with you some really good news, folks, because you may be living in the area in which is being affected by this. God certainly has an answer for you. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ and you abide in Him, He has an answer for you, right? Something that you can stand on and claim and abide in Him. He is our secret place for the Most High, isn't He? Praise the Lord. Well, this is about the Gulf Blue Plague, which is evolving, by Michael Edward. He said, I have been interviewing family and friends who live along the Gulf of Mexico coast in Louisiana, Mississippi. Many of them have been working on shrimp boats before May the 1st, 2010, and a cousin is a shrimp boat owner. I have also spoken at length with two RNs working at a Gulf Coast emergency room and an emergency clinic who are close family friends. I am basing what follows on their observations and knowledge along with my own personal research. A cousin who owns his own shrimp boat was hired by BP to assist in oil boom and cleanup operations. Other family members were also hired and have been his crew while undertaking BP boom and cleanup assistance operations. They were all forced to sign agreements not to publicly speak about their work or anything about BP operations. Their legal agreements do not mention anything about speaking openly to their families. So that's why he's using their information anyway. Stage one, the blue flu, also known as BP flu. Every one of those working on the shrimp boat have suffered from flu-like symptoms since the end of May 2010. This includes migraine headaches, eye aches, joint aches, ear aches, severe coughing bouts, fevers, vomiting, and swollen glands, especially in the neck. These same symptoms are being seen in the coastal ERs as well, but as family and the RNs have confirmed, these symptoms are not caused by any viral flu. This is not the same as the Asian flu or any other viral flu bug. These symptoms are directly caused by a lack of oxygen due to airborne chemicals and toxic gases. Most family members who work and live further inland have not yet encountered these symptoms since their jobs are indoors, where recirculating air conditioning systems isolate them from constant outdoor air exposure. They also drive to and from work with the recirculating AC system on to keep cool. The same applies when they are in their air-conditioned homes, but those who work outdoors 10 to 20 miles inland have recently experienced many of the same flu-like symptoms as those in the family who are working on the boats. So notice the 20 miles inland, it's like our 20-foot wave I was mentioning to you a while back, how that I felt like that was because most of the damage was being and the initial oil leak that came up through our shores, the Gulf shores there, was probably reaching inland in its damage only about 20 miles. And now, of course, it's over 1,000 miles. So hence Kevin's dream about the 1,000-foot wave. That's what I felt like the Lord was showing. Anyway, going on, he says, according to the ER nurses in the southern Mississippi and Louisiana areas, there have been more than 600 cases of what their staffs, that's just their cases, right, of what their staffs have appropriately named the BP flu. The vast majority of these flu cases are with those people who are working along the coast, as well as further offshore on boats, and those who live along the southernmost areas along the Gulf of Mexico. One might initially think, based on mainstream media reports, that these flu-like symptoms are nothing to be overtly concerned about. This is not a matter of take two aspirins, call me in the morning. Nothing could be further from the truth. As reported by researchers at Columbia University's National Center for Disease Preparedness, in late July 2010, more than 40% of adults living within 10 miles of the coast say they have experienced direct exposure to the oil spill or cleanup effort. Within this group, nearly 40% reported physical symptoms of skin irritations and respiratory problems, 40%. Cyanosis, which is oxygen starvation, this is a subtitle. Along with the symptoms that mimic flu-like viruses, there are increasing cases of severe symptomatic cyanosis. These rapidly increasing symptoms range from bluish lip cover color to numbness in fingers and toes. There's also a fast growing increase of pneumonia cases, which are being diagnosed as chemical-induced pneumonia. Those working on boats and those living directly on the coast are the most affected. Cyanosis is simply oxygen starvation in the blood. With a moderate case involving such a lack of oxygen, the skin appears to have a bluish color. Hands and fingers especially show these signs, as will other extremities such as toes and lips. A lack of oxygen in the blood can also have a purplish appearance, where the skin surface is red from the sun exposure, but the blood beneath the skin is blue. Red and blue make purple. All of these blue flu symptoms were temporarily, most everyone suffering from them would eventually recover as the blood becomes increasingly oxygenated once removed from the oxygen depletion source. Short-term exposure and biological complications to gases and chemicals that starve the air and lungs from oxygen, creating cyanosis, are usually reversible. However, long-term exposure is not fully reversible. Long-term exposure depends on how depleted the air is of oxygen and how much time a person has been exposed to that condition. And another subtitle is oxygen depleted water and air. The same goes for oxygen levels in water. Fish, turtles, and crustaceans, shrimp and lobsters, die quickly when oxygen levels have been depleted. Dolphins and whales are mammals, and they depend on surface water air to breathe their oxygen. Since May of 2010, there have been an epidemic of dead fish, turtles, dolphins, sharks, and whales in the northern Gulf of Mexico. The mainstream media has failed to report this truth. As someone who works closely with other animal rescue and wildlife rehabilitation services throughout the Southeast, I have been told that there are very few turtles or marine animals being rescued because the majority are already dead when found. It's more than obvious that the water in the northern Gulf of Mexico is severely depleted of oxygen. This also applies to the surface air that dolphins and whales, as well as people, depend on to breathe. In May of 2010, tests done by various research vessels in the northern Gulf of Mexico showed a 30 to 60% decrease in oxygen levels. This was three long months ago. This surely accounts for the vast fish kills, which also are not being spoken about by the national media. I think Fox News is one of the few. But when you combine lethal chemicals such as Corexit along with oil and gas byproducts from large plumes of oil hidden deep in the Gulf, the problem is yet in its initial stages. As the algae naturally attacks these chemicals, oils, and gases, a further oxygen depletion occurs. It's nature's way of attempting to correct the problem. The research of that natural process is severe oxygen depletion. Stage 2, the blue plague. While the blue flu symptoms are increasing for more and more people, those who have had 30-plus days of direct exposure to the toxic and oxygen-depleted Gulf air and water are in immediate danger of permanent and irreversible biological damage, if not death. How humans and animals biologically react to cyanosis depends on the severity of exposure and time of exposure. At first, the body will compensate as best it can. But sooner or later, the body is overcome and severe complications begin. Without enough oxygen, the body will begin to rot and die from the inside out. The outward signs can be numbness in extremities, swollen necks and throats, blue lips, dark purple tongues, blue or gray skin color, and even bloodshot eyes as the body attempts to filter out the toxins. Lymph nodes and adenoids are overburdened. But these outward signs are the result of severe inward problems. Left exposed to a lack of oxygen, the kidneys and liver will fail and shut down. Heart failure is next. It's the same as someone who has decided to commit suicide by carbon monoxide depletion of oxygen in a locked garage with their car. They die from cyanosis, the lack of oxygen. People living and working along the northern Gulf Coast will eventually die the same way if exposed to depleted oxygen levels long enough. And, of course, all this is above and beyond the deaths of people who have long exposure to benzene and hydrogen sulfide poisoning. That will kill people. The longer this goes, the more people that will kill. And this is on top of that. And the next subtitle is No End in Sight. The oil and gas from the Biloxi Dome area has not stopped flowing. It's an oil exploration well which blew out on or about February the 13th, 2010, so severely that it deposited the blowout preventer, that's the BOP, and the steel well casing hundreds of yards away on the ocean floor. This is reported by several different people. There is nothing there to cap or abate the oil's flow with. It's an open hole that is nothing less than an oil, gas, and tar volcano. While a certain leaking BP well may have been capped 7 miles northeast of the Biloxi Dome area, an already large underwater lake of oil in an approximately 3,000-foot depth is rapidly growing each hour. Its estimated 9-mile length in May 2010 is surely dwarfed in size now. Yes, and this is what those science groups from the different universities are saying. And also, this is what Matt Simmons was saying, blowing a very high-profile whistle on this situation, and, of course, he's dead. It goes on to say, don't be fooled by the lack of surface oil being reported by the mainstream media shills and BP. Corexit hides what is beneath, and Corexit is more toxic than crude itself. The only people denying the existence of the underwater plumes are the people at BP, and they offer no evidence to contradict the extremely solid evidence provided by four universities, including LSU, of the existence of these huge underwater plumes of oil. Yeah, I was noticing their commercial that they quite commonly, you know, play. I was noticing their wording, how carefully their wording was. It said, "You have heard that there's no more oil flowing into the Gulf." They didn't say, "There's no more oil flowing into the Gulf." They said, "You have heard that there's no more oil flowing into the Gulf." Yes, and it came from them, right? So they're being very legally careful with their words here. The blue plague spreads. Just because you don't live on the Gulf Coast, don't think that the blue plague won't come your way as more gas and oil and tar fills the Gulf of Mexico from the Biloxi Dome area. More toxins are released into the water and the air. Evaporation, storms, hurricanes will spread the continually increasing oil, chemical, gas, toxins inland. Certain areas may evidence more severe exposure than those living on the Gulf Coast. In concentrated amounts, it will be as acid rain that has washed and destroyed your crops, trees, or grass. It will enter streams, lakes, underground water sources. Fish and mammals and animals will die just as they have in and along the Gulf Coast. Potable water and food will be affected. The air will be affected. The blue plague will grow as more airborne and cloud-filled toxins spread the Gulf oil and gas lakes beneath the surface inland. There's quite a few people that added to the bottom of the, or sent their replies to the bottom of this article. I'll just read a few of them to you. Here's one. On August the 10th, "The workers have been extremely sick," unquote, she said. They're scared to death to speak out because they're scared to death they could lose their jobs. This is the only source of income that they have," unquote. Workers, she said, came home in the evenings complaining of headaches, nausea, respiratory problems, burning eyes, and sore throats. Here's another one, a reply. 7,000 square miles of no oxygen in the Gulf. On May the 4th, National Geographic asked if the Gulf oil spill was a dead zone in the making, saying if it can't be contained, it could happen. An early August 2010 update explained that beneath the surface lies, quote, "a turbid cloud of stirred-up sediment and dead sea creatures. Flaccid jellyfish floated on the flat currents of tiny corpses. On the sea bottom, the waters were gray and terribly empty. No coral, no fish, no algae, nothing but the noxious, oily streaks of red tides and lethal plankton blooms. Everything in this 7,000 square mile zone, the size of Connecticut and Rhode Island combined, has died from lack of oxygen. It was as if every person in a city were suddenly sucked dry of air and suffocated." And people are pasting, you know, that one came from National Geographic, and they're pasting articles in and everything else. Okay, here's one. "The Gulf blue plague is evolving." Quote, "Other researchers agree, saying the Gulf's dead zone doubled in the last year and may be larger than estimated, caused by hypoxia. That's low oxygen levels. It stretches across the Mississippi River Delta along Louisiana's coastline into Texas. According to the Louisiana University's Marine Consortium, it's the world's second largest and growing, covering about 7,700 miles, an area nearly the size of New Jersey. Marine biologists attributed it to oil and dispersants as well as nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizer runoffs, soil erosion, animal waste, sewage, and seasonal weather, notably hurricanes and floods." Here's another one that was sent in. "I believe we are seeing some of the blue flu in Florida, East Coast here. The vulnerable people, like the elderly, are having breathing difficulties and ending up on steroids and oxygen. But others are reporting headaches, coughing, hives, congestion, burning eyes, etc. People think there's no oil in the water. I keep telling them it's not what's in the water, but what's in the air. We are only 150 miles from the Gulf, as the crow flies, and this is not rocket science. Even my pets don't want to go out in it. Here's another one. I suspect the toxic gases have already reached England. I don't know about this. It's possible. I don't know. In both the Gulf Stream and the jet stream, I have always been acutely sensitive to airborne hydrocarbons. I cannot be in the same street as a coal fire, for example, and have had worsening flu for nearly 2 weeks now, including an uncharacteristic cough. I don't smoke, so real flu rarely gives me a cough. Here's one. I am living in this toxic soup. Yes, I do know it is toxic. My dogs won't play outside anymore either. And I am sick a lot of the time with what you think is the beginning of a cold or flu, but it subsides enough in between to prove it otherwise. BP needs to be held accountable and quit the lying and murdering of people and animals. We need to wake up. For those who have comments supporting BP, please eat the fish from the Gulf. Let's see. For those who have comments supporting BP, please eat the fish from the Gulf, what's left of them. You can vacation down here and swim in the Gulf. You can even stay at my home for free. If you really believe that they are not covering the truth up and lying about what they really haven't done, please eat some fish. Breathe the fresh sea air deeply, and have a good night's sleep. That was a little sarcasm, obviously. Here's one by Vox. He said, here in the Mississippi area, many or most trees are now showing severe strain. Excuse me, I said Mississippi, this is Missouri. Here in the Missouri area, many or most trees are now showing severe strain, especially along highways where there is also high concentrations of ozone pollution already. Trees have gone into their fall colors in August. The normal timing is October or November in Missouri. Trees take on their fall colors because of decreasing sunlight or environmental factors. We know that it's not decreasing sunlight, so that only leaves the latter. This is not just limited to trees. Many plants are also dying with leaves shriveled or burned or displaying large holes burned in them and the surrounding leaf decaying as a result. The media shills have all but laid on the puke that BP kept us safe after 9/11. Why do you hate America? Do you want the terrorists to win? And have worked hand in hand to completely remove the Gulf story from any and all MSM information streams. They want you to believe that it's now nothing more than another crackpot conspiracy theory that a spill, quote unquote, happened at all, and have remained consistent with describing it as a, quote, spill, unquote, as if it were a glass of milk or the kitchen counter that had been knocked over in order to make sure as to minimize the seriousness of this order to keep the patriotards mouthing drill, baby, drill. More sarcasm. But there's some truth behind it. Here's one. Government officials have no credibility. I have been in the Gulf since May the 3rd and have witnessed the outbreak of a public health epidemic as the oil and dispersant came ashore. Every day now, former workers, Gulf Coast residents, and visitors share similar stories with me of respiratory problems, central nervous system problems, chemical sensitivities, or bad skin rashes after exposure to air or water in the Gulf, predictable illnesses from chemical exposure, all of which were avoidable given adequate warning and protection. Stories of illnesses persist despite assurances from four federal agencies, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and the U.S. Coast Guard, that no levels of oil or dispersant measured in Gulf water or air were found to be unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
But government officials have no credibility in communities across the Gulf because the official story does not match the reality of what people are seeing and smelling. The community stories that string together across the Gulf Coast paint a picture quite different from what BP, its contractors, and our government report. BP has already stated that it is not responsible for any long-term effects from its dispersant experiment. Unless American seafood consumers want to be part of the Gulf experiment, I suggest we all support our fishermen and not trust the federal governments to warn us about seafood safety. I have gotten a small, this is someone else, Kate, I have a small garden in central New York, which I believe is showing signs of damage. It has been raining up here almost nonstop for the past 2 weeks. My organically grown and fertilized cucumber plants went from green, healthy, and producing to dead in 3 days. My collard greens are turning yellow with burnt, crispy edges, and the squash plants are yellowing with tiny spots. Tomato plants have sections of dead foliage. Decorative plants and flowers are also damaged. Some of the foliage on the trees is dying, not the entire tree, just sections. Other trees seem to be turning slightly yellow, and there are big brown dead spots on some of the leaves. The water tastes acrid, and I am filtering it with a Berkey water filter. I don't know if the Berkey will take out the corrosive chemicals, but I hope so. I can't see how it would. My other concern is how to filter water we use to bathe, do laundry, wash dishes, etc. Is there any way to chemically cause the water to become safe? Some kind of chemical reaction with other substances that will render the toxins harmless? No, there isn't any such thing as that I know of. As far as oxygenating the water, food-grade hydrogen peroxide might be a possibility, or the John Ellis water machine. So people looking for some way to make their water clean. The Berkey filter will, you know, something that has the same consistency or lighter than water would go right through it. Okay. The Gulf Blue Plague is evolving. I'm in Austin, and after the first named storm of the season, Alex, which came up into Texas bringing heavy rains from directly over the spill, my cucumbers and my corn plants died within 3 days. Tomatoes, varieties bred for the heat, developed severe blotches. Watermelons grew but were stunted. I also developed a rash, and my eyes burned like crazy. It's dissipated now, and the tomato plants have recovered. When I mention the possibility of acid rain from the Gulf, people tell me I'm paranoid. I have a hard time dealing with the apathy. One neighbor told me he has worse things to worry about. And a couple friends told me to stop sending them all the downer stuff. I don't like it either, but I'd rather know than not know. Here's another one. My parents just moved to Florida, and within 8 to 10 days of being down there, their two big dogs got really sick with respiratory problems and had to go to the vet. The vet gave them each a shot, I don't know of what, and pills and antibiotics. This is near Sarasota, Florida. I wonder how other people's pets are, so on and so forth. Here's one, Kate in New York. I'm here in Midtown Manhattan, and we've had the same foliage Agent Orange defoliation symptoms all over the city since the Hurricane Alex rained. No one is onto this, although it's all around us on every street corner. Drooping plants, holes, burns, residue, powder in a raindrop shape. I don't understand that. Anyone suggest a lab to send these plants, so on and so forth? No suggestion. We are having the same problems here in North Carolina mountains, all exactly as you described, the burning of plants. I've read that you will add baking soda and Epsom salts to the top of your soil. It will help. God help us all. I don't know about that. Never heard anything about that. But you see, folks, the testimonies, this article, and the people replying to it who having their own situations, it's expanding, it's continuing. You know, what can we do about it? We can of course tell people and point out to people who don't know and who are not necessarily delivered from the curse, and that includes Christians and non-Christians. Christians, because be it unto you according to your faith, you know, Jesus said, as you have believed, so shall it be unto you, he said, which means, of course, it matters what a Christian believes if they're going to be delivered of this curse or not. They'll be affected with it, run along with the pagans around them if they don't believe, right? So, you can warn people that those symptoms that you see on them and on their plants and they're eating and their fruit that they're eating and the vegetables they're eating, so on and so forth, you can warn them that this is what it is. And also, you can share the gospel with them. Because how many of you know what we've been studying for some years now is how to be delivered from the curse? I would say our book, Sovereign God, is very strong on delivering people from every form of the curse. It gives a lot of wisdom in that regard. I think makes it pretty simple for people to understand. And, of course, you can order them through our site freely to give to people that really want to know and understand how to be delivered. Don't you know that when we see these things happening around us, it's our opportunity to shine, you know, to show forth the Lord's glory, to share with people what he's done for them. You know by heart probably Psalm 91, which declares that he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And in that chapter, he said that there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy tent. He will give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. And they shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. And on, it just tells you that God, he says, for instance, he will call upon me, and I will answer him, and I will be with him in trouble, and I will deliver him and honor him, and so on. God promises total deliverance from the curse in Psalm 91. And for those who dwell in the secret place of the Most High. And, of course, we know that he's talking about the secret place being the Most High. The Most High is our secret place. And 90:1 tells us, Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations.